A wholly unique kaiju experience awaits us this week as the genres of tokusatsu and bunraku, special effects monster movies and traditional Japanese puppet theater, join forces to craft a short film that is a treat on our list. Can this film deliver on the kaiju destruction while also being a soulful examination of belonging and death? Find out with us as we walk through the mist this week. This is Kaiju vs. History, Howl from Beyond the Fog.
Welcome back to Kaiju versus History. This is your blind marionette, calling a monster up from the depths, Patrick, and joining me here is a hardened hunter with the scars to prove it, Miles. Hey, Miles.
Hey, Patrick.
So, not a ton of characters to make little intros about.
Yeah, I know. So here's the wild thing.
One in six chance of getting one.
Long before you and I went on this venture, this movie has been in my, like, you should watch thing on like Amazon Prime for like a literal like decade, it feels like.
Yes. Yeah. Well, not a decade.
Not quite a decade because it's 2019, but it is since it popped up like on an honestly gorgeous poster. Like I've always thought that poster was extremely evocative and interesting. I had no idea this was a puppet film until we sat down and watched it. Like I never watched a trailer.
Yeah.
I kind of put this movie in with like the Raigas and stuff because I was like, okay, a bunch of this independent kaiju stuff. Neat. I love that poster. I will watch it one day, which is like, and it's been in my watch list for, you know, 7 years. And of course that means like, I will probably never watch it unless I'm forced to through a podcast. Like there are movies like back when we had Netflix discs and stuff, there were movies when the Netflix disc stuff kind of ended to streaming back in the 2000s, like that had been on my list since day one. So,
yeah, no, I'm right there with you, both TV shows and movies. But I am so happy to say that right now, as you're listening to this, you can watch Howl from Beyond the Fog. On Tubi. Everything's on Tubi that we're watching these days, Miles. We're so lucky that Tubi exists.
No, we really are.
It's got Gamera. It's got Godzilla.
A random question, Patrick. Do you remember what your first Netflix disc movie was?
Netflix disc movie. You know,
like the first thing you rented from Netflix.
Because you had a list and you can go back through. At one point, I did know. And
I know what mine is.
I feel like it was.
And when you hear the title, you'll be like, of course you did.
I think it was something that I couldn't really get easily somewhere else. And it was either
same
like a French science fiction movie or one of the like Sympathy for Lady Vengeance. Yeah. That's one of those Korean films, because that was like my top. Those were all on like my immediate to watch list when I got a Netflix account. But yeah, what was yours?
Mine was Lipstick and Dynamite, Piss and Vinegar, The First Ladies of Wrestling. And it's about the fabulous Moolah, Mae Young, Gladys Killam-Gillam, and it talks about like kind of in the sense of, I know this is not kaiju related, but still good, League of Their Own, where like the men had to leave to fight in World War II, so women took over the sport of wrestling. And that was kind of the impetus of like mainstream American women's wrestling. And especially Mae Young, like such an influential wrestler. And like, I mean, it's why you have the Mae Young Classic these days.
Right.
In the WWE. But I for whatever reason, when I was like looking through titles, I was looking through stuff that I could not get from this is Suncoast and stuff. And I was like, I was very interested in this document on early women's wrestling, which would like predate my actual falling in love with professional wrestling itself.
That's fun.
But yeah, so back to Howl from Beyond the Fog, which is an independent tokusatsu kaiju short film written, directed, produced, shot, and edited by Daisuke Sato, which is insane.
Yes, and this came about. This is another movie like last week's Attack of the Giant Teacher that was funded partially online in 2017 via Kickstarter, but I believe he made a fan film, Sato, called The Foghorn, or something along those lines, in 2007. So this is a project that's a long time coming. But yeah, this is a very interesting film. Maybe the most unique movie on our list for a plethora of reasons we'll go over here. But yeah, how from Beyond the Fog are you ready to get into it?
I am, but before we do, Patrick, you have to tell us what's in a title.
How from Beyond the Fog? Yeah, I was interested to find out that is not the Japanese title. The literal Japanese title is Suri no Kuni, Land of Fog, that also Google Translate wants to tell you is called Country of Mist, which I found very interesting. But
just like either of those, How Beyond the Fog is such an evocative title.
It is. It's very good. And yeah, I think Fog has to be in there because, like I said, this is based on the Ray Bradbury short story, The Foghorn, which was the original inspiration for The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms. And I say that because if you recall, Ray Bradbury, I think, sued the production company for that movie because of the similarities of one scene. And this, while this movie doesn't have a lighthouse, which is a major aspect of the film and of the short story, it is replaced. The monster in this movie kind of has its own foghorn like roar, which I found very interesting, very different kind of than the more dinosaur
like. I loved that, like, it made it still feel more of an art piece because, like, anytime the monster roared was this one specific musical note. And I thought that was honestly pretty beautiful.
So you've already mentioned probably the main thing about this movie that I think makes it wholly unique, which is it is all puppetry, all voice acted and puppeteered, which makes, I think, this movie has the most special effects, quote unquote, of any tokusatsu movie we've seen, because it's all special effects.
It's all special effects.
It's all,
I mean, I guess you can count, like, the CGI movie that we watched for the Godzilla trilogy. Fair enough. So my thing about the puppets, because they are puppets, but they also look like action figures, and as opposed to puppets, and I felt like I was more watching like a very arty episode of Robot Chicken compared to like puppetry, if that makes any sense.
No, I understand. Yeah, I think I get some aspects where they're really heavily relying on the sculpts of the figures, of the characters, as well as the voice actors, because there's not a lot of movement in some scenes. Some scenes they're just, you know, standing by a window or standing on the edge of a lake and their puppets aren't moving at all. And it's like, yeah, they're really very confident in their design work to sell the scene. And it works in a lot of them. But besides it being a puppet movie, besides it being a short film, this film clocks in at about 40 minutes or so.
Yeah, thereabouts.
Which I think is the shortest film we've added on this list. I think if you go under half an hour.
No, the Rarebit Dream is pretty short.
Yeah, that wasn't a full film review. That was definitely a short. I feel like anything 20 minutes or under, we're in like short territory. And then, but this is, I would say, a story with a, you know, beginning, middle, and end, you know, and deserve it to be on this list, especially after watching it. I was like, I'm so glad I added this on here and kept it on, because there were other like kind of 20-ish minute short kaiju films that I didn't put on the list, which I'd still like to watch and talk about. But beyond that is also, setting wise, one of the most unique films. It's set in like 1907. Mm-hmm. Is that right? Somewhere in that neighborhood. And I feel like almost every kaiju movie is either like ancient Japan or extremely modern or future Japan, you know?
Right, right.
Like at the time the movie came out.
The closest we've had is the 54 Gojirai, probably.
Well, that movie is in the modern era when the movie came out.
No, it's in the modern era, but like in terms of like something that looks like that time period, that's the closest we've gotten.
yeah, this is unique in that aspect. And I guess when I watched the trailer, I did think it was more of an ancient film, but it starts with the main character on a train ride. So some very interesting stuff there.
Yeah, I will say this is a whiplash experience for me because, I didn't watch the trailer beforehand, so I didn't expect puppets. So the first 5 minutes, I'm like, what the F is actually going on right now? I was so thrown off because I just...
It's like, is this character wearing a mask? What is happening?
I like going to these movies a little blind, you know?
Oh, yeah, it's a weird one to go in blind on.
Especially one that, I've kind of had on my Amazon watch list for quite some time. So I was excited to get to this. And then, the first little bit, I'm like, is this kind of like a situation like, what was the one, not Zilla, where we just had, action figures for the... No, it wasn't not Zilla. It was, oh, gosh, what was the movie
that Attack we of the Super Giants, I think.
It was a recent one that we watched where, you
puppets, half cartoons. No.
I'm talking about the one movie that we watched not too long ago. It's a Japanese film where the secret, the American soldier stuff was all done in action figures.
Oh, that was God Raiga versus...
It was God Raiga, yeah.
King Oga.
And so I was like, am I being punked right now?
Yeah.
Got over that pretty quickly, but this is a weird one in that, it feels more like I'm watching a visual poem than I'm watching a film, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, there's dreamlike elements to it, and I will say the plot is fairly simple.
It's simple, but we also have no background. We know some of these characters, but we get nothing. What you see is what you get from each scene. There's no flashbacks or anything like that to explain everything. It's no. This whole thing is just, it's a very evocative piece in that it's a mood piece, but it's if you're looking for like real character development and plot elements and origins that make sense, no. This is more like a folk tale.
Yeah, there's elements of that. I think definitely with the kaiju itself, there's a lot of that because there's no atomic bomb to set off a giant dinosaur down a radiation. This monster just exists, and it makes it feel like it is something that existed before the movie came about. They're just making an adaptation of this giant monster tale. The kaiju in this film, they call Nebula, I think, behind the camera. I don't think they call it Nebula in the film.
No, I don't think so. I think they just call it the lake god.
It's, yes, the Latin word for fog, Nebula or Nebulous. I love this kaiju design a great deal.
It's great. I love that you brought up Beasts from 20,000 Fathoms because it gives me that vibe. And it's so gorgeously animated. This thing... And one of the things about this film, if you watch it on Tubi, is, yes, it's 40 minutes long. You might be a little confused because it says about 70 minutes long. That's because you get another 45 minutes of behind-the-scenes work, and it is absolutely worth your time to watch.
Yes, we have an actually pseudomated monster made by someone who has, at this point in his career, almost 70 years in the tokusatsu film and television industry. Keizo Murase kind of came out of retirement after the Kickstarter went through in 2017 to work on making this completely new monster, designing it, building it. And they started pseudomate acting, I think, in 2019, which you can see a lot of behind the scenes footage about, both with practical model effects. There's elements of blue screen that they did. There's some amazing close-ups and action sequences, multiple bridges in this film. There's a rope bridge kind of in the beginning that gets destroyed. And then the bridges is the, where the climax of the film takes place. Great. They all look so good, but yeah, I wanted to give props majorly to Nebula as one of my favorite new kaiju designs of this century, you know. Not since the 90s have I found something that I've enjoyed.
It's this an much. Excellent design. I really like Nebula a lot. It's just gorgeous.
Yeah. And it, like I said, they don't give it a lot of backstory, but they tell a story with the suit design itself. It kind of has like almost a Joker-like grin, like its cheeks are really far up, so you see a lot of teeth. There are scars.
Shin Godzilla.
Yeah, there's a lot of scars on it, including maybe one that's similar to the hunter who has a scar on his face. And then out of its back is like almost growing a forest. It has like giant driftwood like tree trunks kind of forming like besides a forest, like a little porcupine back on it. It's great to be able to see these videos in the full light of the production process. But yeah, and it also has a great mouth too. They open it up for some roars, some attack sequences. Just every aspect of this I really enjoy. And it's a quadrupedal beast, which is also difficult to do. I feel like they picked one of the harder options, but yeah, I'm a big fan of Nebula. It's obvious that everyone involved in the production of this monster in this movie had a great amount of love and care for the genre and for Tokusatsu in general. So way to go, Howl from Beyond the Fog. Do you have any aspects of the monster suit that you enjoyed?
I mean, like you, I loved all the little details. Like, especially when you watch the sculptors kind of, you know, work with the scales at first and then kind of add like little scars and these little like kind of individual flourishes of the creature. I think that, I mean, like in any kaiju thing, the kaiju typically is the star of the show. And in this case, anytime Nebula shows up, all attention, especially the foghorn, like kind of instrumental noise they make for the roar. Like, now I will say this about this movie, and this certainly factors into anyone's personal enjoyment. This is a mood film. Like, I'm not kidding when I said this is like a visual poem. You really have to, and this is kind of a problem of not knowing what you're getting into can lead you. If you are not in the mood for that kind of thing, this movie can come off a little sluggish and a tad, I don't want to say boring, but certainly not as satisfying as you may want, depending on what your mood is. But if you are in the mood for something like this, it's very easy to kind of get sucked into everything this movie does. I think the one thing that as much care that has gone into the monster, I kind of wish had gone into some of the actual human puppets.
Yeah, they're simplistic. I think for a reason, they almost all only have the single face sculpt, you know, and I think they were really trying to just get like the one defining feature out of the characters that they're wanting to represent, maybe except for the main female character, Takiri,
yeah,
who has the blindfold, which comes down and you get to see a little bit more of her face. But it is the characters are really brought to life by the voice actors, who some of which you've probably heard before in anime.
Oh, there's one I certainly have.
Some you've probably heard before in perhaps, well, they've worked to dub a lot of American movies as well. Ishimoto Kai did, I think, some dubbing for Shin Godzilla, or maybe he was in Shin Godzilla. But yeah, which one were you talking about? The main actor?
Inoue, who is in one of my favorite anime directors' films. That my favorite anime is Makoto Shinkai. And he is in The Garden of Words, which I have literally right next to me. Did not realize that at the time, but
oh, fun.
Absolutely love Shinkai, and loved his performance in Garden of Words. Yeah, I believe he plays the main character in that one, and is
I think that's the main female voice actress is Yo Inoue.
Yes. Sorry, getting mixed around.
Garden of Words.
Yeah, Garden of Words is not related to this show. I've gone on too many tangents tonight, but it's an excellent anime. Oh. It's a slice of life. Short film. It's like 60 minutes long by Makoto Shinkai. Basically, I think it was his last work before he really exploded with Your Name, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, maybe so. I'm mixing up the actors here. I've not heard of that, but I will check it out. Garden of Words? Yeah. I don't think I've seen that one. It says Garden 2013 here, so.
Is very, very good. It is a weird subject matter.
Weirder than puppet kaiju?
Well, it's about an aspiring 15-year-old shoemaker who falls in love with a 27-year-old teacher.
Shoemaker?
Yeah.
Funny.
He meets her when he's skipping class, and she's, I guess, just avoiding work.
Yeah, we've already talked about the amazing modeling. We've talked about the director, who I think just had a pretty stunningly clear vision of the, like you said, the vibe, the mood that he wanted to evoke mm-hmm. with this monster, with this movie. But before we get to rating the film, I want to talk about the music provided by a duo called Chou. I love this soundtrack. I love it so much. I've used it already in just like listening to it. I've played it for friends. It has both, like, there's like instrumental versions you can find online, I think, or instrumental postings of it that work great for kind of like background music. But they also like that just the music or the instruments, I think, really sound. It's like a good mix of like old sounding Koto or Japanese flute music with like a more modern industrial bass to them. So they all kind of have like techno elements as well. Great, great soundtrack. It's something that sets this movie apart, because so many of these smaller Japanese kaiju movies, it feels like they're using stock music in a lot of the interstitial music that they put on here. So it was so refreshing to have something that's like not only great music, but it is bespoke music. It was made for this film. Like, you know, they went and, you know, met with the director, heard about the director's vision. So yeah, I recommend listening to the soundtrack by itself, but also watching this movie. Like you said, it's only like 35 minutes is what's listed on Wikizilla, but you get an entire half hour of the creation of the monster, which I think is, I mean, it's almost like a movie in and of itself. You watch it literally go from like pictures to a tiny model to like fully fleshed out pseudomation. And it's not something that we get to see a lot these days, you know, and for the most part, for like the classic films, we mostly have pictures of the production process.
Yeah. I think I mistook you in a way for Yukari Yukino. I think she just plays a minor character in Garden of Words.
Hmm.
Sorry, it's been bugging me.
No, it's okay. I was like, wait, which one? I forgot. I've watched this like probably a month ago now when we're recording this, so I forgot which is the main
right.
The main female character. Takiri is the main male character in the film?
Believe so.
Is that right?
I legitimately do not remember the names at well, because they're not mentioned but like once or twice. Like, honestly, the character names don't matter. Like, that's why I kind of call this a visual poem, because like that aspect is not important. The important thing is everything else.
EG is the boy. Takiri is the mother. And Inami is the young girl, the niece, I guess.
But I was definitely confusing them with somebody else.
Takiri, I believe. Yeah, so pretty amazing that this movie came about. I enjoyed that it is something so unique, but it still had an an air of things that were very, very familiar, you know, talking about all the expertise from the Showa era Pseudimation construction. In a lot of ways, this movie reminded me of Daimajin as well. It's kind of like this mythic
kaiju. I can absolutely see that.
Yeah. Yeah. Besides, we say this about a lot of movies that are kind of on the shorter side that we enjoy, at least. The main thing I had problems with this movie is I needed more. I would have liked to have gotten this to at least a shorter feature length, like an hour kind of film.
Yeah, one of my things about this movie is, I mean, like I said, it is a mood piece. And if you are not in that mindset, it is going to fall a little flat. Because when the first time I watched it, it fell a little flat. Kind of wanted to rewatch it and kind of readjust my mindset. And I watched it in a different setting, in a different time of day. And knowing what I was getting into, and I was like, oh, this is a beautiful little movie. Despite that, I think it still does kind of suffer a little bit for the same reasons it succeeds. And because of that, it can affect your personal enjoyment of this movie. Because, like, I mean, and this is why I'm going to give it the score that I will give it, because, like, depending on the vibe, you're in terms of personal enjoyment, it can go one way or the other.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like, you know, you can watch this on Tubi. Like we said, I think you should watch this on Tubi, but yeah. I would worry about someone seeing the poster of this, you know, kaiju rearing up, this amazing looking miniature scene on this poster, and clicking it and being very confused why indeed there's puppets. But yeah, I think before I knew about this movie, I was perhaps a little perplexed. But if you put yourself in the right mind frame, this is a fast, fun watch. And yeah, I was ready to watch it again almost immediately. I mean, part of that is because it's so short, but I think coupling it with the production of the movie, I mean, it does give it more points in my book, because this podcast is about the making of these movies in a lot of way. I was so happy it was there.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about the ratings? Because it actually,
yeah, let's.
I was surprised on IMDb. It has a 6.5 out of 10. That's kind of high, I think, for this kind of.
It's high, but I'm not surprised because it is a bit of an art film.
3.5 stars out of 5 on Letterboxd, which is about the same.
That's where, like, I would expect to see it.
7. And on Amazon, not that we talk about Amazon, but of people that bought this, 4.4 out of 5 stars. So very high on that aspect.
Who bought it probably already haven't seen it.
What about you, Miles? Where do you rate this amongst your personal enjoyment?
I'm going to give this an aggregate. My first response when I first watched it was a 6, because I, again, was not in the space for this kind of lyrical poetic movie. The second time I watched it, I kind of felt, oh no, this is more like an 8. So I'm gonna go right in the middle and just say I'm gonna give it a 7, because I think both those scores are valid depending on, like, where you are watching this movie. It's not the kind of art movie that I can always be like, oh yeah, well, this is always gonna work for me, because clearly that's not the case. But I do think it is a good short film that people should watch, and it's a testament to, like, just an artistic endeavor. Like, even though I have issues with, you know, maybe how the human puppets are done, yeah, that's like you said, possibly a stylistic choice that I'm just not privy to, which is fine. That's cool. But I think this is a very, very cool movie. The monster is awesome. The story, while calling it superficial feels incorrect, but yeah, it is a very surface level story. It is much more of, like, you know, a kid's folk tale, in the way that, like, you know, you would read certain books when you were kids, and they were almost like poems. And
I wore out a VHS tape of Odd Crane and the Sleepy Hollow, yeah, when I was a kid,
or Peter and the Wolf or something like that. Yeah. Like, it's got,
and those were short to too. It. Those are like 30 minutes. They remind me a lot because of that.
Yeah. And I think if you know what you're getting into, that can greatly help. But even still, there I can see myself in certain moods, like I'm back and forth. So I'm going to give it a 7. I think it's a fair score. What about you?
perfectly fair. For me, this movie was a short and sweet little treat. Maybe not enough meat on the bone to call this like greatest of all time, but I think in what it's doing, it was a joy to watch. It's a joy to return to and watch. And I think this movie, more so than almost any other of these films, was really made to show a whole bunch at something like a G-Fest, you know, because it is a shorter movie. You'd show the entire movie, have like a 20-minute Q&A with anyone like the director that had come and be in and out in like an hour and a half. But yeah, I kind of put it towards the top of the independent kaiju films that we have watched, mostly because I feel like almost more than any other, it really spent its budget well. You know, could this have been a longer movie? Yes, but has this great unique monster, a great vision, great director. And really at no point was I bored. I mean, it would have been very hard in a 35-minute film. So I'm giving it a little higher, an 8 out of 10. And I'm going to continue down the board for the technical. Like I said, I think the biggest problem I had technically with it was that it was closer to a short film, even though it has a complete story. It is a very simple story. I wanted more from its characters, more from the world that we're living in. And I do feel like, you know, this is the basis for a great character driven story. It's something that could be turned into, you know, like a series. But yeah, so many other elements of this film are firing on all cylinders, you know, from the Suitimation to the puppetry, the voice acting. Definitely not perfect, but I'm giving it a very high score at an 8 out of 10. What about you, Miles?
So I am right there with you. I think this movie is gorgeous. I think the artistry should be commended, lauded, and applauded. This movie is, the set pieces are stunning. Like the actual setting is gorgeous. Like when the way they do like the water when the creature's in it, like just it looks so good. And I think that despite my problems, you know, from my first film with the script, like looking at it as more of a lyrical, poetic film, I can kind of get over it. I still don't give it the highest marks. And I mean, this is on the shorter side, and I don't love how the humans are designed. I cannot deny that it's the outright brilliant work that went into making this thing happen. And stop motion animation is insanely difficult to, and same with puppetry, to deal with anyway. And I think that's what makes it so valuable watching the 2B presentation, is you get a little bit of an insight into like what went into making that creature work.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah,
How much work went into making it work.
Yeah, I am right there with you. This the technical aspect, 8 out of 10 any day of the week. It is just phenomenal in that department.
And you know, I'm just gonna keep my score simple this week for its importance as a kaiju film. Definitely one of the more important movies, I think, on the independent kaiju scene. And yeah, one that I would love to see revisited, love to see a sequel to. But yeah, I want to see more directors out here using Kickstarter, social media, and getting these films that cost like 10K, 20K, reaching out to the fans beforehand, you know, showing them like trailer of what you're working on, and then getting them, you know, hyped up for the film. I feel like because kaiju films is like a subgenre of like a larger genre, you know, the bigger stuff like your Godzillas is going to have broad appeal, but I still want there to be a universe for smaller movies like this. And I think this is really some of the best of the smaller movies. So I was pretty stoked that this film existed. This, yeah, should stand alone as something that other directors hopefully can look at and be like, oh wow, they only raised like $20,000 and they got to make this movie that a lot of people really enjoyed. So yeah, back-to-back-to-back, 8 out of 10 for me for its importance as a kaiju film. What about you, Miles?
I'm back at a 7. Like, first of all, I don't this is tougher for me because I feel like it's a kaiju adjacent movie.
Really?
Yeah, just because of its kind of folklore aspect, it does feel kind of more like a mythic beast, and which I know does sometimes translate to kaiju.
I would say yes, but like it's got so many like weird elements to it as
it,
well.
It does. That's why I'm kind of like, I mean, I'm kind of, I waffle a little bit on it.
And it destroys a city, destroys a bridge. There's so much destruction too.
It destroys a bridge. Yeah, I'll give it the bridge.
But destroys the town. It kills a whole bunch of people.
Yeah,
it
goes, I know, on a rampage. But like a town in 1907 is like not as
watch. Oh, goodness gracious. I mean, okay.
Am I wrong?
I mean, there was fire effects going on.
No. The effects are fantastic. I mean, but no, I'm kind of back at a 7. I think this is very good. It's an interesting one to do because it does feel more like a folktale. Mm-hmm. And that one's tougher to kind of nail down sometimes in terms of its evocative nature as a kaiju film, if that makes sense at all.
Yeah.
But I do think that anyone who is interested in kaiju cinema, kaiju ega, tokusatsu, anything, should watch this movie, because this movie is really, really impressive. And if you go in with the right mindset, it can really rock your world. But I am still kind of, you know, on the lower end of that spectrum. And that's fine. That's just me personally. But I do think this is a very, very worthy film. And I think I 7's a very good score. And for a movie that's not even an hour long, and for it to have the impact that it does is just really, really impressive, especially in a genre that's difficult to pull that off. It's difficult to pull off a kaiju movie in the first place. An independent kaiju movie, I mean, we've covered dozens of those, and a lot of them are like, yeah, we have some fun ones, but a lot of them just are not very good.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that this one can be soulful and interesting and whimsical and moody and also have a creature that looks incredible is, I mean, really a testament to the passion of the filmmakers, and they deserve to be applauded. So this is certainly something that, like, I feel like all kaiju fans should see. But is it like definitive to me? No, if that makes any sense.
No, it does. I just, man, we've gone through so many of these independent Japanese kaiju movies. If we want to just like put that in its own corner.
Yeah, I could do without watching any more independent American attempts at kaiju movies, because all those spoofs are dog do.
Oh, did you want to end the podcast with this episode? Because we got some more coming next season.
Oh, I'm well aware of what we got coming up.
Yeah, so that will bring your score to a 7.3 out of 10. And I'm at an 8 out of 10, solid 8s back to back. And that puts us just over the mark to round up to a podcast final of 8 out of 10. Surprisingly enough. Yeah, I was like, well, maybe my wolves will just not like this as much as me. But that puts it in, contention for one of our greats, 8, 9s, and 10s. We highlight as films that we recommend on the Letterboxd. Speaking of Miles, where can folks find us besides Letterboxd if they want to chat kaiju with us?
Well, if you want to chat kaiju with us, you can go to, you can email us at kaijuversushistory@gmail.com. You can go to our Blue Sky, Kaiju versus History. You can go to our website, kaijuversushistory.com. Please rate and review our show, comment, share with your friends, let us know what you think. But if you really want to talk kaiju with us, you go to our sister podcast, cosmiccrit.com, and click on that Discord link. There is a Kaiju versus History channel there where you can talk to Patrick and I in real time almost any time of day while we're bored at work, and mostly probably talking about whatever new toys, comics, or teasers were announced. Yeah. But Patrick, what are we doing next?
Well, look at us, Miles. Thank you so much, everyone out there, for listening. But thank you, Miles, because next week we're going to finish up season 7 of the podcast. Next week is the final episode of season 7, one of the longest seasons of the podcast so far. We're going to celebrate the season. We're going to celebrate kaiju cinema, and we're going to celebrate ourselves a little. We're going to, you know, pat ourselves on the back, because next week is episode number 200. And yeah, like always, we're going to look back at some of the films, some of the projects of the 2010s, maybe talk about the kaiju cinema kind of revolution that's in full swing right now, and look ahead to season 8, which, you know, for all intents and purposes, is the decade that we're in, the 2020s. It should be the last season of the podcast, but who knows? They'll probably keep making kaiju movies so long as we keep watching them. So that is right. Tune in next time in the next week's episode for History versus the Season 7 wrap-up and Episode 200 celebration.